Good evening. On behalf of Torah in Motion, I'd like to welcome you to this evening's talk by Rabbi Bravender. I want to begin by thanking the Atid Foundation, which Rabbi Bravender heads, for their help in organizing this evening's lecture. It's a pleasure and an honor to have Rabbi Bravender with us. He's really one of the pioneers of Jewish education for over 40 years, especially women's Jewish education. Rabbi Bravender is a native of New York and made Aliyah way back in 1965, received his PhD from Hebrew University, and has devoted his life to educating young men and young women in the paths of Torah. And it's really an honor for us to have him here. And without further ado, I want to introduce Rabbi Bravender, who will speak on Hasidic insights and prayer. Thank you very much.
Hi, Shavua Tov. First, I have excused myself. If I start coughing vigorously, don't worry. It's a sign that there's something wrong with me, but nobody knows what it is. So forget about it. Second thing is I'd like to tonight talk about Tzvila, about prayer, our obligation to prayer, and especially whether there's a seeking devotion, a prayer that might be new to us. First, I'd like to just review a couple of points that everybody knows. You know that there's a machloket, we all know there's a machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban, about whether tefillah is d'oraita or d'rabbanan. In some, it doesn't really matter, because everybody agrees you have to daven. But let's say we're talking about the time of Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu is thinking about davening. That's not, he says, what does the Rambam say? I mean, this is, of course, a historical kind of strange way of looking at it. But what does the Rambam say? What does the Rambam say about me davening right now, wherever I am? So he takes out a Rambam, and he takes a look, and he sees that according to the Rambam, he has to daven once a day, every day. Has to. Whether he has something that he wants to daven about, or he doesn't have something he wants to daven about, he has to daven once a day. So Avraham Avinu says, great, I'll daven. Then he says, well, what should I say? I mean, what, if I don't have anything particular that I'm davening for, I'm just davening because the Rambam said you should daven once a day. So what should I say? So it continues in the Rambam. And the Rambam says, it doesn't really matter what you say, as long as you follow a certain kind of order. That in the beginning, you have to praise God, then you have to thank God for all kinds of good things that happen to you, or you have to ask for all kinds of things, and then you have to thank God for good things that happen to you. So Avraham Avinu says, okay, I'll do what the Rambam says, I can do that. So he goes and he stands before God and he does it. And he fulfills his obligation. But what if the Avraham Avinu didn't know what the Rambam wanted from him? And instead he stumbled upon the Rambam instead of Rambam himself. The Rambam Nachmanides. Right? Another great scholar and halachist. He says to the Ramban, what should I do? So the Ramban says to Avraham Avinu, don't do a thing. Don't daven. There's no davening. Don't daven? Never? Well, the Ramban says, if there's a tragedy, or if there's a national calamity, if there's something that happens that is so impressive that you can't help but turn to God, so we'll turn to God. And Avraham Avinu says to Rabbah, he knew how many times a day? No times a day. You only daven when something very extraordinary happens. So you see that there's a basic, if I retro the machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban, it turns out that according to the Rambam, davening is good for you. Like, it's a good thing to do. So do it one day a week. You have to have something to daven for. Okay, everybody has something to daven for, but it's mainly this idea that davening is good for you. It's something that you should do. Okay, it's not exactly like shaking a lulav or eating a matzah, but it's something that God wants you to do. You all come to Rabban, and the Rabban said, listen, you don't even daven. You can't just daven every day. You can't just daven for no particular reason. Only if you have an overwhelming reason and if you feel that God's help is absolutely necessary, can you daven? Now in the Tanakh, for those of you who know the Tanakh Baal Peh, this will be an easy one. There are countless examples of people who davened. But none of them davened in the way the Rambam said you should daven. You know, like people today, they want to say, when's the next? When's the next? What do you mean, when's the next? You have to be going and walking around asking when sunrise is, you know, like it's a Jewish question. Only a Jew can ask the question. And only a Jew understands that every other Jew in his phone has the answer to this question about when's the next. Because when the next is, that's when you can daven. When you can daven, Shmoneh Esrei. So we all are talmidim of the Rambam. The Rambam said daven. Doesn't matter what your situation is. There's always a good reason to daven. I can say, well, everybody had something. Everybody had some little issue that's bothering them. You know, maybe a bigger issue. But the Rambam didn't like that. He said, you have to really, that's what you see in the Tanakh. People who davened really wanted to daven. They really had a problem that they could only turn to God with. That's what davening is. So you have these two kinds of forces that exist in trying to explain to me what davening is about. There's a davening of the Rambam. The Rambam seems to say, it's good for you to daven. It's good to take time out every day and stand before God. I mean, even if you're not so enthusiastic about it, even if your shuffling variances are not tremendous, even if some days you daven earlier, some days you daven later, it's a good thing to do. Rambam. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. The Ramban, whoever says, hey, that's to put a stand before God. Can you stand before God? Can you stand before God if you're not motivated? If you don't feel the need to stand before God? If you don't feel that only God can solve your problem? So when you feel that way, then you die. But if you don't feel that way, what's the point? And this is like editorializing the Rabban. The Rabban didn't say, what's the point? But you can imagine such an idea that davening is about a response. It's something that I'm driven to do, but I'm not driven to do it. The Rabban said, maybe it's almost like a desecration. Almost like a desecration. You ever done it in the next minute? You ever done it in the next minute? I mean, the women probably didn't, but a lot of men probably do here, especially the Nets is so late. Where is the Nets in this part of the world? 7, 7:15. Nobody knows? You don't have an iPhone? What?
It's about 6:07.
What time?
7:45.
7:45. It's amazing the response you get to technical questions. I'll do it again. When is the next comma in Toronto? Any place in Toronto? 7:45. I should look at the luach. Why should I look at the luach? I'm not that technologically advanced society. What's a luach? It's a
7:49.
There you go, 7:49. So if you dial the 7:49, the next 7:49. It's not so hard to stop it with the next. Not so hard to get out of the morning, stop with the next. It's like an advantage. So, with that, we now know what the next is. Let's go back. So you just go a minute to a next minute. You go to the next room, this time it's very loud, it's so good to sing where you're at. So they say, Krishna, and it's not 7:49, but it's 7:46. And they're up to Shmuel Esrei. You can see the whole sequel, because they're very annoyed, you know, because everybody wants it to work out exactly. But everybody's standing there with their phones. Not sure, their phones. Like this, as the seconds stick away, and then they say, Hashem was like the double beginning, and they say, hold together, that's exactly to it, like crazy. So I wonder, what are they doing? I mean, what would you call this? This activity. I don't know. So I don't like to dumb in the destiny. I personally, I don't find myself a model for anybody else, but I don't like it because it turns into an obsession with time. And obsessions with time are very good. I mean, if you have a choice of obsessions, you know, it's a choice between sucking your thumb and being tied, connected to the nets. So I guess being connected to the nets is better. So, what are you doing? What are those people doing? So they're all fulfilling the Rabban's kind of doubt. Now you know that at a point in history, Hasidus was born. I don't know exactly what that was. And I don't know who the midwife of Hasidus was. But I do know that after the Baal Shem Tov, at the beginning of the 18th century, there were Hasidim. And the Hasidim, of course, presented themselves as contrary to what had existed before that. They didn't like the Misnag. They didn't like the Misnag. But it was okay. Because the Misnagdim didn't like the Hasidim. So it was like a family. Like a family. They used to go to weddings together. But they wouldn't daven together. They would eat milkshakes together. But they wouldn't eat fleshes together. They would together kind of developed along the time. Right? So the Hasidim wanted to capture the Jewish people and take the reins away from the Misnagdim. You know Misnagdim, those are the people who, you know Misnagdim, you know that word? Those are people who are unhappy and always looking on the floor. Because they think there's something there they can find. So those walking around looking to see what's on the floor. Hasidim are people who dress funny, but they often are happy. Misnagdim usually dress less funny, but they're never happy. Never happy. In fact, it's forbidden for them. Because happy people give the impression that they solve the problem. Whatever the problem is working on, they solve it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry you have to do this, but I'm happy you did. Tremendous tension between Hasidim and Islam. Hasidim said, you can be Jewish and you can be happy. This was a remarkable idea. Still like a happy example. Everybody knows, you know what a Yahrzeit is? Yahrzeit. That's like when you remember the day that somebody who was close to you was an Nifter, somebody died. Yahrzeit. Yahrzeit. So misnagdim, I mean, we're all misnagdim, right? We wear regular clothes. You wear the regular clothes, you're misnagdim. So we're all misnagdim. So you know what a misnagdim do on a Yahrzeit? A Yahrzeit, your father or mother, you know you have a Yahrzeit. What a misnagdim do?
Fast, sometimes.
They fast and they learn. That's a double threat combination. You know, you sit there and you look at a Gemara unhappily, and you fast because you're even more unhappy than you thought you were. That's the standard. What does Hasidim do? Scotch and scotch and herring and sponge cake. The sponge cake takes care of the scotch. And the herring takes care of your breath. So, they have the same people, the same Jews, who are all Orthodox, right? All of them, all try to do the right thing. Here's what he does in shul. He says, I'm your side with my help is aided. So he says, okay, now with all the Jews, I'm your side. What are you going to do? I'm going to fast. I'm going to fast. So fasting is the unhappiest expression that the Jews have. When they're really unhappy, they fast. When something terrible happens, they fast. So when the Misnagdi comes to the shul in the morning, he says, my help is saved. So he adds, he says, you know, something terrible happened 200 years ago. My great-great-great-great-grandfather died. And in order for me to feel how terrible that was, I'm going to fast. But he's in Olam Haba. He's in Gan Eden. I mean, he was a righteous man. So I remember him on this day that his righteousness is being rewarded. So what am I going to do? I'm going to join in the Simcha. So that Hasidim, I mean, this may be an example. But it's one of many. And it indicates that Hasidim had developed a different attitude to life. Life was about getting yourself to the next simcha. You Hasidim at a wedding, they sing and they dance and they jump and they you ever seen a snagdim? You ever know a snagdim at a wedding? Grows like this. You see the chassan is sitting there. He's been trained for the last 4 weeks to look unhappy. It doesn't matter when he's married, but he has to look properly unhappy. Around him are rabbis who are also unhappy. They didn't want to go to the wedding. They want to sit there. They're tired. But this one says in the taxi, that one got in with his friend. But none of them, all these rabbis are there, so what are they going to do? What's the thing? Let's say, let's possibly soon. Let's make the tsuba fall, or fight fall to the tsuba. Of course, I would just put it away like it's where I was in the Sinai condition. The priest, the chassid, the kala spent $1,000 on the tsuba. And he comes to the rabbi, the other rabbi, the alternate guy, you know, have these, the guys who come from the herring. That's fast. Sometimes this creates a problem because I remember that this story about the Nitziv. You know, the Nitziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. And the Nitziv was, it had many, very many normal characteristics, believe it or not. Okay, so when the new boys came to Yeshiva and Elul for the first day, they dominated them, the Nitziv saw the Nitziv of one boy just kept up in Shmoneh Esrei. Didn't stop, everybody finished, and this one boy continued. So after the mincha, the Nitziv went over to that boy and said to him, "Young man, in this yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva said the longest one is. Anything else, you can leave." So then, today, that also doesn't exist. Every yeshiva has a few guys who outdo the Rosh Yeshiva. It's not clear to me what exactly they're doing during this tremendously elongated period of time. But it certainly does not contribute to good cheer. Especially the other people standing around that bet you have to wait for somebody to finish. It's like a little bit annoying. So here the chassidim, they're happy. Here the smakdim, they're unhappy. They're unhappy. The Zohar says that there are some people who attain high levels of Kedusha b'yadayim, hands, and some people b'raglayim. And so you know that when people dance, they often clap their hands and they stomp their feet. And so Chassidim said, I don't know if anybody actually said this, but it's like, even if this conversation didn't take place, it took place. You understand? I mean, I stylized it, but this is really what it was about. So Chassidus said, if Kedusha, if sanctity can be achieved by clapping your hands, by stomping your feet, and by dancing around, and if that's what I'm doing when I'm davening, well, maybe I should be clapping my hands and stomping my feet while I'm davening. So if you walk into certain Hasidic shtiebels, not every one of them, today everything's different, but they're still, it's still possible to go to such a place, it's still possible to go to such a place where besides davening, people are dancing around the room. That doesn't seem like anybody's in charge. Doesn't seem like anybody's in charge. So you had these two strains of tefillah, of davening, how to do the mitzvah. The Rambam said, do it every day. And then the Rambam said, and so Chazal gave you a nusach. They gave you the words that you could use. And the Rambam uses the word kavanah sometimes. Intention. But he then says the word happiness. Joy. That there's a joy in davening. What would the Rambam do if he had the Chassidus Yeshiva and the Rambam Yishmael Ezra and people jumping up and down? He would be terrible. So the conquest of the Jewish people by Chassidut took place in prayer. Of course, it also took place in Rebbe's, it took place here, but prayer was such a universal activity. And the Chassidim was so imaginative. It knew directions of tefillah that they just conquered the world. And it turned out people had a choice. They're going to go to Davut to Stagner or the Davut to Hasidim. And a lot of people joined up and went to the Hasidim. So now the third part of the story that I'm going to tell tonight, I'd like to tell you something about Rav Nachman of Brest. First of all, I have to admit that I'm not a Hasid. And I'm not a Brassel. Not only am I not a Chassid, but my parents, Zichron and Lebrocha, both came from Hasidic families. Both were Kalmina Chassidim. Both families were families Kalmina Chassidim. So I'm not only not a Chassid, I'm an apostate. But I'm not a Chassid, I'm not a Brassel of Chassid. You know that Eretz Israel, I don't know about Toronto. It's like a resurgence of people interested in being What do they call that? Those are people who don't know anything about anything. They have that distinction. All the other brothers of us even don't like that. But so on. I mean, that's how it is, the Jews. The Jews, your initial relationship is dislike. And it's after years and years that you sort of like manage to talk to each other. So Rav Nachman of Breslov was the founder of this kind of Chassidut. And even though I'm not a Breslov Chassid, I recognize the fact that Rav Nachman was a very exceptional person. Which doesn't mean that he had no weaknesses or limitations or anything. I mean, we're all modern Orthodox, right? We know that there's psychology. And we know that people are not always what it seems that they are at the first. Nevertheless, there are people who have value added. And there's something about them that is special. In my opinion, Rav Nachman of Breslov is one of those people. Now, Rav Nachman of Breslov wrote, he didn't actually write, he used to give lectures. And these lectures were, he had a Talmid, his name was Natan, Rav Moshe. And the Talmid happened to have perfect recall at a photographic method, which is handy if you want to promote yourself as a great person, to have a Talmud who is like that. So the Talmud would write down the lectures that Rav Nachman gave, and Rav Nachman would review them, and they were collected into a book, a large book called Likutei Moharan. Likutei Moharan, these were the lectures delivered by Rav Nachman of Breslov. The only thing in the literature of Breslov that you could say, Rav Nachman actually wrote himself. No, he didn't write it. Right? It's like Rav Nachman wrote it, then he checked it, but it's very close to being written by Rav Nachman. There's another book that they put out called Sichot HaRav. Sichot HaRav, Conversations with Rav Nachman. In this case, the Talmud, Rav Nosson, would talk to the Rebbe. How are things? How's the weather? What's doing? What would you like to eat for lunch? You know, like, and then Rav Nachman would say things. And he, Rav Nosson, wrote them down as he remembered them. But we said he had a perfect recall, a wonderful memory. So it really becomes the words of Rav Nachman, except that Rav Nachman didn't edit them, as he did in the Likutei Moharan. The Rav Nachman's words did not edit. I know you're not quite sure whether I say that Rav Nosson had a photographic memory. How do you categorize that? So I'll tell you a story. A story about Rav Nachman and Rav Nosson. Not such a great deal. But the story is this: Rav Nosson, he knew that he was a great scholar, a great Talmid Chacham. But he was entirely devoted to his Rebbe, Rav Nachman. Now he wanted to write some original Torah there, as it's called, Torah. He wanted to write Torah. But he felt he couldn't do it unless the Rebbe gave him permission. So he said in the story, he writes himself, he says, It was Erev Pesach. I went to the Rebbe. I said, Rebbe, I'd like to write some of my own Torah. Then, which he eventually did, but I'll tell you in a minute. I'd like to write my own Torah. But of course, I have to ask you permission. I can't do it without asking permission. So Rebbe Nachman said, okay, sounds like a good idea. But before you do it, I want you to review all the things we've learned. And then he listed them. I want you to review Shas, Shulchan Aruch, the Zohar, all Kabbalistic literature. And he says, when you do that, come back to me and we'll finalize this agreement. So Rav Nosson writes, it totally ingenuously. He says, so Erev Shavuos, after I had done what the Rebbe asked me to do, I went back and I said, I did it. And the Rebbe said, okay, go write your own Torah. So they took it from Pesach to Shavuos to review Kol HaTorah Kula. It's an easy thing to do. You know, it's like when Rav Kook was in Balashim. Rav Kook was in Balashim, he learned the Seder Pekis. You know the Seder Pekis? They called him Daf Yomi. he learned the Seder Pekis. 60 Blat Gemara a day. Rav Kook learned 60 Blat Gemara a day. I know you think that this is okay, but it's not. It's actually obvious. Somebody asked me once, how can you learn 60 Blat Gemara a day? It takes some time just to turn the pages. So I said, if you don't know the 60 Blat Gemara, so it's impossible. But if you know them perfectly, it's essential. What's the big deal? Rav Moshe Feinstein used to learn the tour every month. I don't know if you think he's what the tour is. The tour of the Beit Yosef is every month. If you know it, it's a piece of cake. If you don't know it, it's a mountain that you can't ever climb up to. So this is what Rav Nosson reports about Rav Nachman of Ratzon. Rav Nachman said, you know, I know people davening. I know people come to davening. And things bother them. They're not really thinking about davening. You know, they have words, these Kabbalistic words, so annoyances. We would have a different world for it. You know, people come to shul to daven and they think about business, or they think about home, or they think about this, they think about that, they don't think about davening. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Nosson, you make sure not to get too overly excited about that. Okay. You're not really thinking about that. But not so terrible. God's not terrible. This is the Rav Nachman. This is the idea that a Kabbalist has about that. He says, you know, the more perfect a man or a woman is or are, whoever knows the answer, is the more perfect a man or a woman is, is the more the enemy tries to make him fall. And so really, it's a great merit from heaven that we're not always davening properly. Because we're not davening properly, so the Satanistic forces in the world, they look down at that person or those people davening and they say, that it's not even interesting. And they pass on to somebody else, which enables you to recover and become a real davening. So you see, Rav Nosson has several sections, Rav Nachman, through Rav Nosson, has several sections on this. The literature, we're talking about Litvak and Hasidim, right? The Litvashim, they ask the Litvashim of Shkiach, what should I do? You know, what should I do? I can't tell you. That's Kanagra. They don't think the right things. I'm in the right to turn ourselves into a psychiatric ward. Everybody's bad. It all gets the biggest turnout, women in Yerushalayim. And what's Shiurim get the biggest turnout? The women in Yerushalayim. Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara. Somebody gives a Shiur at Lashon Hara, there's not a woman that wants to miss out on that. So here's the Litvak. It's really, you're a bad person, but you can improve. And have a world of short yesterday. Say the word slower. Think clean thoughts. Be a specified word. What did I about to say? What did I not about to say? He said, well, that's the way it is. People like that. You're not going to change anything. But what you can hope for is a moment of clarity. That's what Nachman Brown. You can hope for a moment of clarity. Even if your davening is not what it should be, even the way you address yourself to God is not the way you would like to address yourself to God, nevertheless, you're in davening and you may get a moment of clarity. And in fact, not when Russell goes on and he says, it's like, to me, amazing. You know, why do we daven today? in a minute. Why would not a minute? It's just a distraction. Never could say David a minion is better. David a minion, you see your friends, how you doing, what's doing, what happened. You see the news this morning, did you went on the internet, you're not on the internet, and that's about what do you need a minion for? So somebody gets a little clarity someplace. Supita Zimri, Kriyachma, Shmona Esra. And you stand it together. So somehow you affect each other with those moments of clarity. The idea that Rav Nachman had was, you're not going to change yourself. You're not going to be somebody else. But even within the context of who you are and what you are, you're able somehow to get benefit from davening, from being part of that davening community. It sort of impacts what you feel. But you're not davening perfectly. You shouldn't oppress yourself. You shouldn't punish yourself. Just read the words, simply, straightforwardly. And hope for a moment of clarity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might give you while you are down. So we see that I don't want to use this terminology today, but psychologically, I mean, there are two different worldviews about a person. One is the harsh, disciplinarian kind of worldview. We have to push a person into a certain mold and make sure that he never leaves that particular mold. And the other is, you know, a person is a person. And he is, as to a great extent, as the Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted him to be. And since he is that way, there's got to be a good option for him as well. It can't be that there's an obligation to die and somebody can't die. It can't be that you are not already fit to become in this process. So I think it's important for us to think about the options. If our place is to daven, and who to daven with, and how to daven. And I hope that maybe these ideas that exist about Tefillah in a variety of places are helpful. I wish you all well. Shavuot Tov. If you have a question, I'll be happy to listen to it, although I'm not sure I can answer it. Yes?
The concept of God creating individuals with different qualities that may not be able to be molded into one standard pattern doesn't only hold true for tefillah.
Doesn't only
hold true for tefillah.
Yeah.
That concept holds true vis-a-vis halacha, vis-a-vis daily life.
So, I mean, halacha, I think, is a lot more formalized. I mean, if you eat a piece of matzah, you ate it. If you didn't eat it, you didn't eat it.
Right.
If you shake the lulav, you shake the lulav. If you didn't shake the lulav, you didn't shake the lulav. If you shove the Shabbos, you shove the Shabbos.
So it's only a non-law, strict law.
Well, I don't know. It's tefillah special because it does have law. It is bounded by law. Nevertheless, it's very difficult to understand how the law makes you into a person who can daven properly. I don't say that I had an answer. I'm just telling you that there are possibilities to explore the problem, the question.
But serving God is not only through tefillah, it's through everything else you do in your life. So those are individual ways of doing it as well.
There's a difference between serving God, with, I say, God wants me to do this, I'm going to do it. You know, like people, like my aged father wants me to get him a newspaper, I'll go get him a newspaper. But there's another kind of serving God, where you are standing before God, and you're recognizing God, and you're turning to God. Now that's a little bit more difficult to define. Yes. Yes.
If Rambam says that we're supposed to number once a day, where does the 3 times a day come from?
That's a good question, but I didn't mention it. But I suggest, instead of my explaining it to you, which I would be happy to do on a different occasion, when I wasn't coughing as much, is to look at the Rambam Hilchot Tefillah Perek Aleph. And you know, he says clearly where 3 times a day came from. Okay? And you? Are you related?
Yeah.
Your sisters? Oh, I know they have the same kind of clothing.
It's a sale.
I'm trying to be friendly. Not my natural
Anyway, so before you were talking about how we're all in Sanjeev, and I just had a little trouble with that.
What was I talking about?
We were all in Sanjeev, and I think we're both Sam and Mitznazim, and I think we can choose to be, because you know, there's like one of them has a very kind of sour attitude to everything, and one has a more happy attitude to everything. I don't think we're just one type, I think we're a mixture, and we can choose depending on our attitude.
Okay, I like that.
Because I don't think that we're, like, I think we're, the Jewish nation isn't always sour, and it isn't always happy, because we have our ups and downs, but I don't think we're specifically one kind of people, and that's what makes us both different,
especially. I like what you said. It's very, but we would have to work and think about what sour means and what happy means.
Right, but you don't think, like, I feel like on Kabbalat Shabbat, it's not as if we're sitting and looking on the floor while we're done. I think there's also a lot of dancing going on in Kabbalat,
meaning.
Yeah. There's different, like, I don't
what,
think.
What was Kabbalat? It was a chassid or a mitznagid?
I think we're chassid.
Me too. Yes.
But not all tall necessarily.
Okay. I got the point, then. I think you're right. The next time I give this talk, I'll correct it. Yes.
Did the Hasidim differentiate themselves from the Misnagdim by a higher priority on tefillah versus learning Shas? And was that their number one priority?
I think so. I think that they sachatol, in other words, I'm not sure it's written anywhere, that Hasidim felt that that being a Talmud Chacham was part of a professional option. Like the Jewish people need Rabbanim, the Jewish people need Ayanim. They used to call them play Kodesh until they stop being so much Kodesh. So I think that the Chassidim saw the elemental Jewish act as being to be like. Yes, I think so. Yes.
If I understood Dr. Stern correctly, I kind of agree with him in the sense that I think you can extend the mitzvah to tefillah to the mitzvah, so you could do it in a perfunctory way, or you could do it with kavanah, and derive meaning from it. And if you're like me, you're a modern Orthodox, hopeless McNugget, but you don't necessarily want the package deal already. So how do I break free of that mold and stop looking at the ground and enjoy life a little?
Listen, the supermarket is selling whatever it's selling. It's not selling what it's not selling. If you don't want to be, if you want to be a chassid in the primeval forest, you could give it a try.
No, but what I'm saying is I think, you know, someone who's chassidish, they have a rebbe, and whatever the
rebbe says. You don't want a
rebbe. You necessarily don't want a rebbe, but you want the, performing the mitzvah with some degree of gusto, let's put it that way, as opposed to just going through life and emotions of it.
So gusto away. But I can't solve that, you know.
Well, you solve
it. I'm trying to describe what I think is a reality. How you react, if you accept the description as being fairly accurate, then you have to deal with the problem. Yeah, but you live in Toronto. Toronto is not a town full of Chassidim. So you don't have that option so much anyway. But if Kalbach, Mignonim on Friday night do something, so maybe you could expand it to something else, something more than that.
They do shortage, you know, product like the Harlem. So you can have called the Harlem, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not. My days as a youth leader are over. Yes.
Why did the Karlin Chassid become the positive?
Who?
Why did the Karlin Chassid become the positive?
Why? Because I went to the Yeshiva Flatbush.
You didn't necessarily have to buy it.
You know, everybody, all the people who think that they can think out of the box, you know, like the people like that, they can't think out of the bigger box that they build to contain themselves. So, you know. So and that's cool. We're committed to certain things, and open-mindedness about religious activity was not one of them. But it's a great school. I mean, I don't mean to. I had a wonderful time in Flatbush. 13 years. It's the only place I didn't want to go to but us. When I was 17. Okay. I thank you again. You're welcome.